Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Wednesday, September 4th. In breaking news in the past hour, Los Alamos is now the seventh county in our state recognizing marriage equality. That comes after the Los Alamos County Clerk lost her appeal of a judge's order to issue licenses to same-sex couples seeking them. Sharon Stover argued that the licenses issued by her office require a male and female or bride and groom applicant and required a fix by the state legislature before she could proceed. Judge Sherry Rafelson disagreed, saying the marriage statute only references a couple and the license form is immaterial. Comments by U.S. Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz made Tuesday as he toured New Mexico's two national labs point to continued uncertainties in federal funding for the facilities. Noting that the nation's Budget Control Act and its mandatory sequestration cuts will be ongoing, Moniz says every effort will be made to secure the funding needed for both Sandia and the Los Alamos National Lab. Funding cuts there could potentially affect the continuing efforts to clean up decades-old radioactive waste at the facility. PNM's proposal to shut down two of its four coal-fired units at the San Juan Generating Plant near Farmington will be presented to the state's Environmental Improvement Board tomorrow. PNM said back in February such an agreement was reached to allow San Juan to comply with a federal visibility rule. If approved by the Environmental Improvement Board, the matter then heads to the federal EPA. If accepted there, the two units would be retired by the end of 2017. Senator Tom Udall says he has grave reservations about President Obama's proposed U.S. military intervention in Syria. At hearings by the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, Udall asked if the administration's planned bombing campaign might not further pull the nation into the Syrian civil war. The senator also questioned whether the U.S. had exhausted all diplomatic and economic sanction options to affect Syria's behavior. Udall says he'd like to see new efforts made to get Russia and China to stop support for Syrian President Assad's regime. The Diocese of Gallup, headed by Bishop James Wall, will file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. That's due to strapped financial resources from lawsuits over clerical sex abuse. Bishop Wall says that since he took over, the number of such lawsuits, some over alleged incidents decades ago, has continued to increase. He says Chapter 11 reorganization presents the only effective means to compensate sex abuse victims without imperiling the church's ministry and mission. Santa Fe police are looking for three bears spotted on the prowl near Santa Fe High School and St. Francis Drive on Tuesday. City animal control agents say bears are usually seen in the city around this time of year, but recent activity is above normal. Within the past week, three other bears have been tranquilized and relocated after found roaming residential streets. While active sightings continue, police are advising Santa Feans to bring pet foods and hummingbird feeders inside, along with their trash receptacles. The Santa Fe Board of County Commissioners is seeking individuals to nominate for State Representative District 50, the post left vacant when Representative Stephen Easley passed away last month. Those interested must be 21 and live within the district, which also includes portions of Bernalillo, Torrance, and Valencia counties. Current office holders are not eligible. Santa Fe County will accept letters of interest and resumes until noon, Monday, September 9th. Ultimately, it will fall to Governor Martinez to select a replacement for the remainder of Easley's term. The search continues today in the Jemez Mountains for missing wildland firefighter Token Adams. He was last seen Friday when a crew was dispatched to the area to investigate a small fire. Some 250 people, including state police officers and National Guard members, are engaged in locating the 41-year-old Token, a captain with the Jemez Ranger District. Weather is often inconsistent, and recent statistics on the southwestern monsoon bear that out. The National Weather Service office in Albuquerque had reported that Duke City rainfall totals for July hit 2.7 inches, making the month the ninth wettest on record. Now, however, the numbers for August tell a much different story. Average Albuquerque rainfall for the month is over 1.5 inches, but just 0.4 of an inch was received. That makes last month the 10th driest August on record. And weather for Santa Fe. Look for mostly sunny days today and into the weekend as our region enters a drying trend. Highs will be in the mid-80s with only the slightest chance for a late-day shower. Overnight lows throughout the period in the mid to upper 50s. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 81 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Evolve Real Estate Santa Fe. Local, independent, responsive. When selling a home or looking for a new one, Evolve Real Estate is here. Learn more on the web at evolvesantafe.com or by calling 699-3985. That's 699-3985.
And at Noon on KSFR now segues to today's feature stories. For the recently ended fiscal year 2013, legislative session funds allocated for use by our state's developmentally disabled population went unspent. That money has since been put back in the general fund. Joining us now to talk about this is State Senator Linda Lopez from District 11. Senator, explain to us how the discovery of the monies wound up untouched and back in our general fund.
Well, for this last fiscal year of 14, we appropriated as a legislature an additional $4.6 million to the Developmental Disability Support Program, and that was supposed to be serving about 230 clients, new clients. And sitting at the Legislative Finance Committee hearing last week in Chama, New Mexico, I was reading through some of the information that they do give us, and reading the, and this is on, it's public information, it's part of the Legislative Finance Committee newsletter. On the back page, it says that it listed right there about $2.8 million in unspent developmental disability support program monies were being returned to the general fund. And when I saw this, it was incredulous just to, first of all, read it. And knowing what has been happening over the last year and a half within the Department of Health and, just with all the different issues that are talking about cutting services, you know, trying to restrict some of the support services for many of our families who are on this DD waiver, it just ignited me into saying, what is going on?
That doesn't sound like a huge amount of money considering the scope of its application.
No, sir, and it's not that much money. I mean, we've spent up to over $9 million at one point during my tenure in the legislature of trying to help and work with our families who are in need of services, support services, especially for this population that has no voice, essentially. Families in rural New Mexico, they don't have access to many services. If they're driving and have to bring their child in, for speech therapy, if they have to bring them in for physical therapy or such, they have to drive them into a local city, sometimes even into Albuquerque or into Roswell or someplace where there's a concentration of health providers. But part of the issue that to me just raised, as I say, my eyebrows went up just reading this piece of information, is that there's been an evaluation process that the families who are part of this developmentally disabled waiver, they've been going through an evaluation process over the last year and a half. And the way the process has gone, it's actually changed some of the status of many of our families, where if one of the recipients, one of the clients, received a or B, depending as to where and what you were evaluated on for in need of services, many of them, their budgets were cut back. I have some constituents in my own district whose services have been cut back, which means if they have someone who's watching them, they are now cut back maybe 5 to 10 hours, and that makes a big impact, especially for families who need to go to work. This can also be as respite. I mean, there's so many issues out there that the department and this administration has been cutting back on the clients who are part of this developmentally disabled waiver support services program. And now with this money being returned, it's like, what is going on? You continue to cut services and now money is being returned to the general fund. Once money returns to the general fund, it's back into the big pot, and then we reallocate it this next legislative session.
And any way to get the monies back to their intended purpose?
Essentially, once the money has been reverted to the general fund, essentially that money again goes back into the general pot of money, and then we have to come back during this next legislative session and hopefully reappropriate it. But if we do so, this time questions really need to be asked of this administration. If you are truly advocating and wanting to work with and bring on more persons, more families in need of services, why are you returning these monies? If you're cutting the budgets of those who are currently receiving services, what's going on? Why are you returning this money? And you know, to me, that's the biggest one of the many problems within this developmentally disabled waiver program is if we're supposed to be giving more services and they wish to do so, then why are we continuing to cut monies for families that do need the services just to maintain a quality of life? We put more money in as a legislature, and now the money's come back. Just no answers, no idea, nothing at this point in time. So I'm hoping that even as a member of the Health and Human Services Committee, I also serve as a member on the subcommittee for disabilities. This will be coming up at one of our hearings this fall just to see if the department can answer.
And anything else you'd like us to know?
When the legislature appropriates these monies, we do it with the intent that the departments are going to fulfill their obligation, and that's part of the obligation that the administration has. Legislature appropriates, the administration, of course, makes sure that the programs were working. It just doesn't seem as though this has worked. It's working. And for this particular population in our state, these are those that we don't see all the time out there in the public. You know, many of them quadriplegics, whatever the case is, our children with autism, all of these families need services. It's very hard if you don't have a child or a family member who has a disability of some sort. It's sometimes hard for us as public to relate. But once you have a chance to see, understand, or even as having a family member, this is very irritating just to see this information and to understand how we have been cutting and cutting these last 2 years. And now to have this money, it's just, there's no reason why this should have happened.
State Senator Linda Lopez, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Hello, I'm Eric Dunn.
And I'm Atiyat Mayans.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to Today's Youth, Tomorrow's World.
This week, we're talking foreign policy, from Africa to Asia. We look at U.S. aid to sub-Saharan African countries, and also at a history of Sino-American relations.
We hope you'll join us on Wednesday, September 4th at 6:30 p.m. here on KSFR.
Seventeen minutes past the hour, as At Noon continues. Later today, the Jewish celebration of Rosh Hashanah begins. Here to talk about the holiday is Rabbi Malka Drucker of Santa Fe. Rabbi Drucker, why don't you tell us about Rosh Hashanah?
This holiday, Rosh Hashanah, is the first of the, it's the new year. It celebrates two things. It celebrates the season of fall coming, and it also celebrates an internal shift within us that we have the capacity to change, and this is the communal season in which we all make that effort to become better people.
This sounds comparable in some ways to the Lenten season in the Christian church.
Yes, I think that's right. This sort of that self-examination. This is the month preceding Rosh Hashanah. Elul is the month we're just ending now, and that is known as the Days of Grace, when we do an inventory of the soul, and we look to ourselves, and we realize that we won't be forgiven until we make amends with the one that we've harmed, and we go to that person and make that amends, and then and only then do we ask for God's forgiveness.
What's the history behind the holiday?
The history behind this is that this is a holiday that is in the Jewish Bible. It's a holiday that there are actually four new years in every year that celebrate the new year of the trees, the new year of the animals, the new year of the years. So this one is of the years, the new year of the years. And it has been, as I say, celebrated for the last 3,000 years, and it concludes with Yom Kippur. It's a time of judgment, self-judgment. And in this time of self-judgment, depending upon how well we've done our examination of self and made those amends and have kept hope for the future that we'll do better in the coming year, that then that on Yom Kippur, this season ends. And the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are called the days of awe.
What are some of the other customs of the celebration?
Well, the first thing is that all Jewish holidays, except for Yom Kippur, have some kind of special food connected to them. And at this time of year, apples and honey, apples dipped in honey, are the traditional New Year food. Some Jews from Sephardic countries also, I understand, eat the head of a fish, or have it on the table at least, because this is the head of the year. The other primary custom, an important custom, is the blowing of the shofar, the ram's horn. And the commandment for that, the obligation, is not so much the blowing of it, but the hearing it, the listening to it. So that's the two primary customs and laws of the holiday.
Is the shofar sounded at other times?
That's a good question. The shofar, traditionally, in the ancient world, was blown for this. It was blown before war. It was blown for famine. It was blown as a warning. This time of year, it is is what remains primarily, although some of us blow it every day for 40 days through this month of Elul that I mentioned to Yom Kippur. So that's a 40-day cycle. And that the intention of it is to wake up so that we hear in the shofar a call or a plea for a sound within ourselves that we cannot make that calls us to a higher behavior. And this is the call, and that's what we all listen to.
What types of services are celebrated?
Tonight, we begin the holiday. All Jewish holidays begin in darkness at sundown because many things begin in darkness, including life. So it begins at sundown until the following sundown. And this holiday is 2 days, so we have services tomorrow morning and Friday morning. And our services Friday morning are outdoors at the Santa Fe Mountain Center. And then after our last service on Friday morning, then our next service is the following Friday night for Yom Kippur.
And anything else you'd like to say?
What I think is really the most remarkable thing is that there is a holiday that celebrates our capacity to change, to choose our lives, to choose life. And, you know, you get busy in your life and you've got this to do and you've got that to do every day. This is a moment where you get to sort of stand on the mountain, so to speak, and sort of look at the life you have been living, especially in the past year, and then listen deeply for how to do better, how we can most of all forgive ourselves. The capacity to be able to forgive is very important, too. Without it, we couldn't go on. So that we have that capacity and that we're encouraged by the season. It is not I alone in this process, but I know I have a whole village and everybody is doing the same inventory for themselves, and that I know that if I want forgiveness, I have to give it to others.
Rabbi Malka Drucker, many thanks for joining us here at KSFR.
This is Martha Burke, host of Equal Time. Join me weekly for 2 minutes of Equal Time commentary every Saturday during the Bob Edwards Show. We'll explore politics, public affairs, and what's new in the news. Be with us, 2 minutes of Equal Time, right before 8 a.m. every Saturday during the Bob Edwards Show. Don't miss it.
It's a world of diversity on KSFR.
12:24 here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. For some time, New Mexico has had the ignominious distinction of being a national leader in opiate-induced overdose deaths. But now there is some good news. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard joins us now to file this report.
For several years, New Mexico has been struggling with one of the highest overdose death rates in the nation. Now recent reports show some encouraging news. Mike Landon is an epidemiologist with the New Mexico Department of Health.
In 2012, the number of overdose deaths in New Mexico dropped 7%, and at the same time, the amount of the dosage of opioids dispensed decreased 7%. And recently, we've seen both increasing in parallel, overdose deaths and the amount of opioids dispensed. And now, really for the first time recently, we've seen a decrease in opioids dispensed, which is probably related to our decrease in overdose deaths. So we're talking about basically primarily prescription drug overdoses and illicit drug overdoses, such as heroin and cocaine. Prescription drug overdoses make up the biggest portion of overdose deaths.
There have been a number of interventions undertaken by the state which have helped ease the death rate.
Well, I think there's been a lot of focus throughout the state in reducing misuse of prescription drugs, particularly opioids, among patients, and also improving approaches to prescribing among physicians. So that's sort of the big picture. Secondarily, we've worked to provide naloxone, which reverses overdoses, to patients at high risk of overdose. We've been doing that for a long time with respect to injection drug users who might be using heroin in particular, but more recently we've been providing it to people that have been getting prescription opioids and may be at high risk of an overdose.
A great deal of effort has gone into educating healthcare providers on the use and misuse of opiates.
There are 6 licensing entities in the state that license providers that can prescribe controlled substances. And 4 of those licensing boards have promulgated rules that provide guidelines with respect to prescribing. And included in these guidelines are requirements that the prescription monitoring program, which provides a report of a patient's controlled substance prescriptions, must be checked in certain instances. And all this, we believe, is coming together to impact our overdose death rate.
Educating the public has also helped.
I think public education has had an impact, and we don't know how much of an impact, but clearly this has become a bigger issue for the public, and the awareness is increasing. However, New Mexico has such a high rate of drug overdose death, a 7% decrease is only a start, and we really need to see sustained decreases before we can feel like we're making a significant difference here.
The state plans to continue these efforts.
I think the focus is in sustained implementation of some of the interventions that we've talked about, and I think we just have to persevere and assure that people are using these medications appropriately and that providers are prescribing appropriately.
Landon does see some significant challenges ahead.
I think one of the biggest challenges will be to balance our interventions with respect to reducing the misuse of prescription opioids and assuring that people with chronic pain can actually get these medications without barriers. And that is a key challenge right now, and we have to work at that. The dream would be that we've cut overdose deaths in half. Realistically, New Mexico has, with the exception of 2 years, led the nation in overdose deaths since 1992, first due to heroin overdose death, and now more recently with the contribution of prescription opioid overdose deaths. New Mexico has significant problems with substance abuse, and I really do hope we'll reach that target of cutting these overdose deaths by half, but we have some big challenges ahead of us.
Mike Landon with the New Mexico Department of Health. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
And Dan Garrity back with you now at the news desk. A new trend towards environmentally safe vehicles involves the use of compressed natural gas. Thanks to a grant, Santa Fe now has one of the vehicles, with plans for acquiring more. Joining us now to discuss this is Rita Bates with the New Mexico Environment Department. Rita, let's begin by having you tell us, what is compressed natural gas?
That's a good question. It's just gas, natural gas that's been compressed to a liquid form so that it can be used to power vehicles instead of like gasoline or diesel fuel. In the case of the project that we have done with the city of Santa Fe, we replaced one of their recycling trucks that's powered by diesel with this compressed natural gas truck. Well, it will be replaced in October, I believe. And that way you don't have trucks going through neighborhoods that are spewing diesel exhaust. Instead, it will be, you know, this cleaner vehicle that's driving around through neighborhoods at a very slow speed. So it sounded like a really good project to us, and we were really excited to do this with the city of Santa Fe.
What are some of the other advantages of this type of fuel?
Well, burning cleaner is really our number one goal for the state of New Mexico for the Air Quality Bureau. Diesel emissions are highly toxic, especially, you know, poorly running diesel engines. But the city, I'm sure, keeps their trucks very well maintained. But getting diesel engines off the road we get funding from the federal government, from U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, as part of the Diesel Emission Reduction Act program that's authorized by Congress every year. So we get funding through that, and we do projects to reduce diesel emissions throughout New Mexico. This is just our latest project that we're talking about, and we're hoping to do another one with the city of Santa Fe next year to replace another vehicle with compressed natural gas.
What problems, if any, are associated with using compressed natural gas?
I think the biggest problem with it is actually that there aren't a whole lot of fueling stations, but the city has that, so that's not a problem for the city of Santa Fe. Natural gas right now, the prices are low, but I couldn't tell you, you know, what it would cost to run a compressed natural gas versus a diesel vehicle. Another thing, though, that I can tell you is the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department, their Energy Conservation and Management Division, is working on increasing the infrastructure for compressed natural gas, and they're doing some work on that out in San Juan County, New Mexico, with us. The county itself, San Juan College, and the city of Farmington to try to promote the use of compressed natural gas in that area.
Do any other New Mexico communities have this type of vehicle?
None that we have funded. This was our first compressed natural gas vehicle replacement. We have funded throughout New Mexico different projects, but mostly those have been diesel retrofits or replacement of older diesel vehicles with newer diesel vehicles. We've done work in the city of Albuquerque with the city of Deming, the Bloomfield School District, with putting on their school buses heaters so that they don't have to idle them in the mornings. With Taos County, with the New Mexico Association of Food Bank, we did a very interesting project with lots of different retrofits, putting fairings on trucks and things like that in order to, you know, reduce their use of diesel fuel.
Can someone from the general public order a vehicle powered by compressed natural gas?
I'm really not sure. I see this as being more, what we've seen is that it's more of a fleet kind of thing. And so I think private companies can do fleets with compressed natural gas, but I don't think you could go to a car lot and buy a compressed natural gas vehicle. I think it's kind of a special order.
And anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we've been getting grants from EPA on this program since 2008, and this is a popular program with Congress because the states really like getting this. It really helps cleaning the air. It gets It improves diesel vehicles, and we will likely continue to get funding, hopefully. Occasionally, we do come out with requests for proposals. So when we do come out with those, we're willing to get them from anyone. We've helped private entities as well as public entities, and we're happy to work with people on this, and I would be happy to have them give us a call and talk to us about, you know, what they'd like to do, and we can then keep them on a list so that we can let them know when we have funding available.
Rita Bates from the New Mexico Environment Department.
The Women in Transition course at Santa Fe Community College provides women of all ages and backgrounds the tools to create a more positive future. Women in Transition offers practical information on topics like career building, financial independence, stress management, and more. The 7-week course meets Friday mornings from 9 to 10:50, starting September 6th on the SFCC campus. Partial tuition scholarships are available. To learn more, call 428-1486. That's 428-1486.
12:34 now at the KSFR News Desk. And here, near the bottom of the hour, is the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Already the Labor Day weekend seems like a distant memory. Last night I had a dream that I was mightily anticipating every holiday, you know, like Thanksgiving, New Year's, etc. But they all passed without ever arriving. So I didn't even have the memory to enjoy. It was basically a nightmare. Then again, what would life be without work? Well, maybe retirement. A friend of mine retired at age 50. His brother asked him, "Don't you get bored?" The reply was, "It's like every day is Saturday. I love it." My only consolation with my retired friend is that he likes to golf, and he lives in Minnesota. So much of the year when he wants to play golf, he has to pay money to travel to a climate where he doesn't have to try to find his golf ball in the snow. As for myself, there's no retirement in my future. As I tell people, I retire when God cleaves me in my head with his golden axe. Hope it doesn't hurt. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude this edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.